This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with Swede White, who is embroiled in a controversy of sorts with Councilman Ryan Heck that's received some media attention, and we'll talk about Councilman Heck's apology to Swede White. Also joining us is Sarah Becker, an LSU sociology professor, to comment on online bullying. Is that what's going on with Mr. White and Mr. Heck? And we'll hear from William Arsenault, the head of CODAFIL, longtime Louisiana education official whose good friend and former colleague Dale Thorne died last week. Dale was an LSU journalism professor for 15 years and the first press secretary as governor for Edwin Washington Edwards. And also joining us is Sammy Hanna Jr., the publisher who also knew Mr. Thorne. But now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Michelle Southern's producing today, and if you'd like to join us, we invite your participation at 297-5633. Outside our area, the number is 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Yesterday, in the morning edition of the Daily Report from the Baton Rouge Business Report, a story by Stephanie Regal, the fine reporter who's been with us a few times on this show. She led with this story. It says, once again, a Metro Council member is at the center of a controversy over a Facebook post and has issued an apology. Earlier this month, Councilman Ryan Heck, an outspoken supporter of the St. George Incorporation movement, got involved in a heated exchange on his Facebook page with a follower who accused him of using kids to justify segregation white flight. Heck's response, writes Ms. Regal, included the threat that you better be prepared to back up that claim or meet me somewhere so I can whip your ass. Then last week, in a conversation thread with LSU graduate student Swede White on Councilman John Delgado's Facebook page, Heck asked White, do you want me to come over there and kick your ass? White, a former reporter for Baton Rouge's National Public Radio affiliate, 89.3 WRKF-FM, writes Ms. Regal, did not take the question lightly. He had his attorney send Heck a cease and desist order. And that's where we are, with Swede White in studio. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well. So what's happening?
Let me first clarify something. Heck sent that threat to me in a private message. It was not on the Facebook thread, so let me just clear that up.
Okay.
What happened is John Delgado posted on his Facebook page, who are the poverty pimps that you refer to in your post, Ryan E. Heck? I want names. Since Ryan Heck has deleted his Facebook account, I'm not sure what the post was about. I commented on that thread, basically referring to Councilman Heck as Martin Luther, referring to when he posted an article on the council chamber doors, much like Martin Luther did in October 31st of 1517, his 95 Theses. Ryan Heck did not take that well, I guess, and he sent me a private message that said, well, what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
In all fairness to him, it was followed by a smiley face emoticon. Then it said, you defriended me, hurt. I don't know this man outside of Facebook. I've had limited interaction with him, and I don't take threats of violence lightly, especially from an elected official in a position of power. If this would have been a random person on Facebook, this probably would not be in the news.
Okay. He has apologized.
He has apologized to me, and I accepted his apology publicly on Facebook and Twitter.
Are you doing so right here in our studio?
Yes.
Good.
So I do accept his apology. That does not mean I agree with what he did, his past behavior, or that I like the guy. I've heard a lot of people commenting that, you know, just accept the apology and move on. You know, I've got a lot of grow a pair, man up, this type of stuff. No, that's not what's happening here. An elected official, a public official, is threatening violence against people. That is beneath his office, and it's an embarrassment to the city of Baton Rouge.
All right. 297-5633 is your number. And this sort of thing has happened before at higher places than the East Baton Rouge Council. I remember Bob Dornan, the flamboyant congressman from California, once getting in a fight on the House floor with a colleague. But in this case, Ryan Heck has threatened two different people using the same terminology both times. And we have invited him to be on this show. And to this point, he has declined, but we hope he will show up and discuss this and other matters. But at any rate, he's apologized. Should this be held against him?
I think it takes a big person to apologize, but at the same time, it's politically motivated, obviously. You know, you mentioned a congressman. I think Councilman Heck pulled a Dick Cheney when he said GFY, and I think your listeners can figure out what GFY means to this other person on Facebook. And it reminds me when Dick Cheney said that on the floor of the Senate to senators. And it just points to a lack of decorum in political discourse between elected officials and between elected officials and their constituents and just regular old citizens.
He could be voted out, of course. If I recall, Heck was one of those people, rare people, who got elected without an opponent.
Yes, he ran unopposed.
So he is an East Baton Rouge council person. He and John Delgado are taking turns making headlines with their statements. And I know they've had some differences, but occasionally at drinking establishments, they can be seen hoisting a few together. So maybe they have kissed and made up. And it sounds like Ryan Heck is manned up and
so
apologized, and he's trying to do the right thing. That's what it sounds like.
That's what it sounds like he's trying to do. But, you know, this goes back to October 24th. This sent up a red flag for me. At 12:30 at night, he notified a commission member, Bill Huey, that's with the Historic Preservation Commission. This is an email at 12:30 a.m., by the way. And the email reads, in part, "If you three clowns weren't on the HPC granting favors to friends and punishing those you don't like, there would be no issue. But the fact of the matter is you in all caps, are the problem, and you're too blind to see it." Now, I don't understand who's up at 12:30 a.m. writing emails to the HPC and to the media. I think it's a bit bizarre. I also think that his rhetoric here is completely inappropriate. You know, if you're going to call for someone's resignation, ask for their resignation. Don't call them clowns.
Okay. Sounds like you might be a future opponent of Mr. Heck.
I don't live in his district.
Well, you could move. 297-5633. And in just a few moments, we'll hear from Sarah Becker, who's an LSU sociology professor. And I think a lot of this gets down to social media. And some people, they view this as having a conversation on a street corner. It's much more than that.
This is reality, okay? Facebook and Twitter have become reality, especially for politicians and especially for everyone. And politicians need to be very careful what they say and what they post. It's like Representative Fleming in Minden when he posted a story from the satire site The Onion about how Planned Parenthood is building an $8 billion abortion plex with a lazy river in it. Mm-hmm. He posted that to his Facebook account. It made him look like a complete idiot.
Well, chances are he will be reelected, despite looking like a complete idiot, as you say. And Mr. Heck, despite this, may very well end up getting reelected. There is so much scripted commentary from politicians, Swede, that maybe some people who speak their minds are almost endearing to the people at large.
I think so, and I think everyone should speak their mind. I like politicians that are real. You know, this is like Councilman Delgado. He stands by what he said to St. George, that they're terrorists. He stands by that. He apologized to a very select group of people, but he stands by that comment. And I like real politicians that aren't scripted. You know, I like to hear what they have to say. Now, when you start to threaten violence, however, that becomes problematic.
Okay. Well, in Stephanie's story, she quotes Ann Edelman, public relations consultant of Zender Communications, as believing some politicians are being deliberately provocative using social media to energize their base and garner media attention, which certainly seems to have the desired effect in the short term. But you say Mr. Heck has deleted his Facebook page. Sounds like he's trying to do a little damage control.
Yeah, that was not a smart move at all. Anytime you say something on
your view.
In my view. I don't think that's a smart move. From a political science perspective, from a communications perspective, that is not a smart move because it's basically an admission that you've done something wrong.
297-5633 is your number if you'd like to join the conversation. Swede White, who is sitting on the area where Councilman Heck said he was going to attack, is at this point unscathed in the war of words that was started by Councilman Ryan Heck. Judy on I-10. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning. I'm a daily listener and occasional call-inner. I'll be honest with you. This sounds incredibly immature. We've got so many issues going on in Baton Rouge. And somebody's like, well, I'm going to kick your behind. It's like, dude, this is so stupid, it's painful. And it doesn't bode well for what's happening in the days to come. I have children both now and in recent years in public school. We don't have time for all of this. We need to get a better educational system. We need to get a handle on crime. And if St. George wants to be St. George, though I look at it sideways, because it's mostly affluent and not heavily diverse, then the bottom line is they've got to figure out how to become their own and how to not damage Baton Rouge in the interim. Thank you.
All right. Would you like to respond to Judy on I-10?
I agree with what she said. We have much bigger issues that Councilman Heck could be focusing on instead of staying up late on social media, sending threats of violence. Also, I'd just like to say that, you know, the St. George effort, what they're doing is motivated to create a better school system. And I believe in the democratic process under the Louisiana State Constitution. But also the city of Baton Rouge has the right to do what they're doing, to annex portions. But I'll tell your listeners a little joke here. Instead of naming that area in honor of St. George, they should name it in honor of Bodie White. That way they can call it Whiteville without being accused of being racist.
All right. Well, Swede White, it could be named after you, too.
I don't deserve a city named after
me,
Jim.
Okay. 297-5633. I'm sure Councilman Heck would agree with that. We could call it Heckville, too, if we wanted to. But... David Johnson, before we go to some more callers, he writes that the other person threatened on social media by Ryan Heck has invited Mr. Heck to come on over. Is that correct?
That's from what I understand, from what Councilman Delgado told me, yes, that is what happened, and Heck has declined the offer.
297-5633, David at LSU. David, good morning. You're on the air.
Thank you, sir. Why did the people from Zachary want to move from East Baton Rouge and have their own school system? And why did the people from Central want to move from Baton Rouge and have their own school system?
All right. Well, that's a question that is legitimate, but it's not really what we're talking about at the moment. But this action by Mr. Heck, it does stem from... a conversation about these kinds of things, and believe me, people are quite passionate about this. I imagine that when all is said and done, if this goes to a vote of the people, we're going to have more than words on Facebook. We're going to have some fisticuffs in the streets before it's all over.
I don't know if it'll get that bad, Jim, but it's dividing the community, and I think that what really bothers me is that Lionel Rainey and the supporters of St. George, they aren't communicating. They won't even tell people in the St. George area how many signatures they have. I saw a news story where someone directly asked them, how many signatures do you have? And they're just like, we're close. Well, the people that live in the St. George area deserve to know as much information as possible. You know, a lot of people are saying that there's going to be 7,000 kids displaced. There was a parent yesterday at a press conference with Together Baton Rouge, or I believe that's the name of the organization, saying that she lives in daily anxiety, not knowing where her kid's going to go to school. There are going to be kids pulled from magnet schools. St. George does not have the budget to even open schools, you know, after all these annexations are going to happen, and I believe the annexations will probably happen.
Mm-hmm. 297-5633 is your number. We're hearing the voice of a Swede White who was threatened via Facebook by Ryan Heck, and Ryan Heck has since apologized, the councilman from East Baton Rouge representing District 11, who he also threatened another person, and he has acknowledged that this was not a good thing, and according to Mr. White and others, Ryan Heck has deleted his Facebook account. What happens when you do that? Does it just go away, everything you've ever posted? Is that what happens?
Yeah, what happens is everything goes away, and any comments you've made, any posts, and it's at basically deactivation for 2 weeks. And if you log in within 2 weeks, it will reactivate your account. If you let it lapse for 2 weeks, it goes away forever.
Okay. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on the air.
Good morning. And I know this is a very important topic, but... I just think that if the citizens of St. George need to improve East Baton Rouge Parish school system, it's something we all should work on together. And I know that there have been a lot of things going on for a long time, but that solution to break away is not going to work. I mean,
we got to roll for a break, but we shall return in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. And I started the show with an account of the lead story on the Daily Report from the Business Report yesterday morning from Stephanie Regal. Another Metro Council member issues an apology over Facebook posts. It's Ryan Heck, who has gone toe-to-toe verbally with one of our guests here, Swede White, and another person on Facebook. And with us to talk about this, and we will take a few more calls, but I wanted to get Sarah Becker, Professor Becker, in the conversation. She teaches sociology at LSU and has for the last 6 years. What's going on with this kind of bullying, for lack of a better term, maybe that is the right term, that's going on in social media right now?
Well, what I'd really like to do is to frame this in terms of masculinity challenges and the costs of masculinity. So, but before I do that, it's really important to point out that generally speaking, men gain access to privilege by virtue of their gender, but that doesn't mean that there aren't costs associated with having to feel like you have to be a certain type of man in our culture today. And gender studies, which is my field, were really concerned about this, in addition to looking at the privileges men get by virtue of being men. And one realm that this plays out in is in terms of violence. And so, generally speaking, men are expected to be capable of violence, whether it's real violence or threatened violence. So, for example, if you're in a bar in a drinking establishment and your friend gets into an argument, if you don't step in, if you're a guy, if you don't step into that argument and help defend your friend, you run the risk of being perceived as some kind of wuss, so to say, or, you know, we could substitute some other colorful language there. And what this means then in this sort of context, we've seen this play out where instead of the debate being about the real issues, the debate has become about manhood by virtue of the initial threat being levied by the councilman. And we see it also in the public commentary around the issue. So people who have responded to it in the comment threads on the websites have done two things. Number one, they've diminished the seriousness of the issuing of threats by saying things like he just lost control of his emotions, or he just got heated, the best of us would do it, he wasn't showing proper restraint. But then we also see those who are being critical of Mr. White and of others who are critiquing Councilman Heck saying things like, man up, are you a man or a mouse, calling it a pity party, and saying things like, people are such pansies nowadays. Mm-hmm. And so this masculinity challenge, which is what I would call these sort of things that are being said, they're masculinity challenges. One thing that the scholarship shows us is that when that starts to happen, it almost always invites more of the same.
So did Mr. White do the right thing by getting a cease and desist order? Now, two people were threatened, and one of them, according to several people who have commented this morning, has offered Mr. Heck the opportunity to come to his house.
Right.
Now, Swede did just the opposite. He got a cease and desist order. Who did the right thing?
Well, I don't know whether or not I would want to get involved in a debate about the right thing, but what I can say is that what Swede did is shift this away from a combat over manhood to being a public discussion instead. And so that increases the opportunity for there to be dialogue about the real issues that are underlying what's going on here, rather than this to become a physical argument between men or a rhetorical argument between men online.
297-5633. Evan downtown. Evan, good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Becker and with Swede White.
Yes, I wanted to get Mr. White's opinion for those who say no big deal, to kind of put the scenario, if Mayor Holden had made the exact same comment, would the city's reaction be the same? Because to me, it's not getting much press coverage. It's a little talk about it, but there's no outrage.
All right.
So the question was, if Mayor Holden would have sent that threat via Facebook, would I have done the same thing?
Would it have gotten the same attention? Or would it have gotten more attention?
I can only speculate on that. I mean, I really can't answer that question. He's the mayor of Baton Rouge, so I would assume perhaps so.
Okay. Chandler Loop was on this show a few years ago and said that the mayor had threatened him. But if that happened, and I'm Chandler Loop said it, so I'm taking the man at his word, but if that happened, he did it in a private conversation. Most people aren't stupid enough to post it on Facebook.
Well, in all fairness, Ryan Heck, he sent me a private message. The other guy, he did that on a public forum. And I don't think Mr. Heck realizes that Facebook is a public forum. So is Twitter. Yes, it's a virtual world, but it is public. And, you know, I know Jared Loftus is giving a social media class. I think Ms. Regal mentioned that in her article in Business Report. And perhaps he should go attend that, you know, not to give him unsolicited advice, but his actions on Facebook and deactivating his Facebook account and stuff like that, it's just causing him harm. And his political capital is just diminishing.
But as mistakes go, and we all make them.
Sure.
We all make them. Some would say this isn't a deal breaker. It shouldn't discredit Mr. Heck for the rest of his political career, should it?
Well, Jim, I've said some things on Facebook and Twitter that I regret. I've sent emails that I regret. You know, we all make mistakes, yes. Now, do I think that this is a deal breaker for Ryan Heck and he can't be reelected? Probably not. We'll see when election time rolls around. You know, people have short memories, so I don't even know if this will come up in an election.
All right. Rick Causey writes, it's ironic we're talking about schools and education and improving them, but it seems that some of the proponents of such really miss something along the way in their education. Okay. John on Perkins Row. John, good morning. You're on the air with Swede White and with Dr. Sarah Becker. Hi, John.
How are you, Jim? I'll be very quick. My concern is are there going to be any criminal charges filed? This is a threat issued in a forum, and it does fit under our criminal code. Is people more aware of this, and are they going to file criminal charges? It's a little bit more serious than just, posturing between men.
No, there will be no criminal charges filed because Mr. Heck apologized, and now if he threatens me further, I will waltz myself down to BRPD, file a police report, and have a restraining order filed against him. Now, the statute is, if I feel an immediate harm, I can press charges. And if I do feel like I'm in immediate harm, that's what I'll do, because that's what I can do under the law.
What do you think about criminal charges? Would that be appropriate, Dr. Becker?
Well, I think the caller makes an important point about the fact that this sort of behavior is illegal. And what it reveals to me about this situation is that we have a person who occupies a position of power that feels entitled or privileged to engage in illegal behavior in a way that others, if they were to do the same thing, would not be able to get away with.
Okay. And I found that most people who talk like this generally don't back it up. But just the thought.
Well, that seems to be the case with the fellow that sent Councilman Heck his address. And, you know, I wouldn't encourage anyone to go get in a fist fight over comments made on Facebook. However, the threat of violence is problematic and it has to stop.
Well, that's true. And from a public official, it's serious business. Obviously, if Governor Jindal did something like this, I would imagine his presidential aspirations would take a right turn.
I think his presidential aspirations are misguided.
Well, that's a whole different issue. but in a certain area of life, and politics is one of them, we at least give lip service to certain decorum. And I think Mr. Heck, in this instance, two instances, has gone over the line. And we certainly would like for him to come on because he has apologized. Now, I've gotten a few other emails equating this to Councilman Delgado's statements.
This is totally different. Councilman Delgado did not threaten violence. He called them the Baton Rouge Taliban. He called them terrorists because he thinks they are terrorists. And they are terrorizing East Baton Rouge Parish in his view, and quite frankly, in my view as well.
Well, that's just it. You agree with him, so maybe you're giving him a bit more charity than you would if Ryan Heck were saying the same thing about those who were against the St. George movement.
I messaged John Delgado after he made those comments, and I told him, I think that was a bit over the top. Baton Rouge Taliban. I mean, that brings up so much imagery and violence in itself, okay? But at the same time, Councilman Delgado stands by his word, and he's not going around threatening people with violence, and that is a strong and huge difference between him and Councilman Heck.
Well, Dr. Becker, what lessons can be learned from this?
I think there are two important implications in thinking about what happens when masculinity challenges become a part of the conversation. Number one, it encourages other people to respond with the same, which sort of changes the tone and the style of the debate, so that we're encouraging people to be tough and to be in control rather than to be good listeners or do anything that's perceived as being feminine or trying to build bridges, things like that. That's the first implication. I think the second implication here, and one that I think everybody is concerned about, is that there are other issues that need to be discussed. So, for example, you know, the debate over St. George is an issue that many people feel needs to have more discussion. But more directly tied to this case, Councilman Heck, his first threat was issued in response to being his perception that he was being called a racist. And rather than engaging with that and considering what does it mean to be a racist in a society where everybody feels like they're colorblind and where everybody knows not to be Donald mm-hmm. Sterling, yet we have racial inequality that persists without that sort of animus, what does racism mean? That debate's not happening. The other debate that's not happening is what does it mean for Baton Rouge when public officials are threatening people who disagree with them with violence? And what does it mean to debate? Are people going to want to engage more? Are people going to shut down when they feel like their public officials are speaking to them in this way?
Okay. Well, we'll see where this goes, but hopefully it has been diffused. And to give Councilman Heck his due, perhaps the reason that he has to this point declined to be on the show is because he would think that any appearance would escalate the situation rather than diffuse it. He has apologized, so perhaps that's enough. And Swede, you say you're okay with the apology until further notice.
I'm okay with the apology, and you know, I tried to call. I left a message with his legislative assistant because I wanted to talk to him in person, and basically say to him what Dr. Becker has said, that this is inappropriate, and you know, he needs to take a step back and look at his actions and look at how he's feeling, and heaven forbid he have feelings besides anger. And look at how he's feeling when people call him or accuse him of racism or just simply disagree with him.
All right. Ben Lanier Neighbors writes, Mr. Heck also made comments in the Advocate link through Facebook. In them, he entered into an exchange with a woman. He asserted that white liberal mothers are defending the magnet schools because it makes them feel less guilty or something to that effect. This fits into the professor's discussion about comments by males, white males, in this instance.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that that would get invoked in his discussion of how other people are approaching the problems that everybody's dialoguing about. But what I don't think it has happened yet until, you know, right now, I guess we're talking about this, is the ways in which his status background, the status that he occupies as a white male with a degree of privilege and power, influences what sort of things he's willing to say and what stances he takes.
Well, we thank both of you for joining us today, and we'll see where this story goes. And for the community's sake, hopefully it goes away.
I agree, Jim, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Swede White, and thank you, Dr. Sarah Becker. And now we're about to be joined by two distinguished gentlemen, one of whom is a longtime figure in Louisiana education circles and the head of CODAFIL, Bill Arsenault. Also intricately involved through the years with Louisiana Public Broadcasting. And the other is Sam Hanna Jr., the publisher of the Concordia Sentinel and the Ouachita Citizen, and both of whom knew Dale Thorne quite well. Dr. Dale Thorne was a man who was involved in Louisiana politics as the first press secretary to Governor Edwards when he was in office back in 1972, took the oath of office 42 years ago last week on May 9th, and Sam Hanna was an assistant press secretary to Governor Edwards for 1 year, and I think, Sam, you were a student of his at LSU. Good morning to you, sir. Sam, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here.
When did you first meet Dr. Thorne?
Oh, well, I think we met years and years ago. I mean, I've known Dale long before I was a student of his at LSU. He and my father had a relationship that extended for a number of years.
Well, Dale affected hundreds, if not thousands, of people in the classroom, and he was quite a man about town. Had many incarnations in his career, and William Arsenault has joined us, who perhaps was his closest friend, who worked with him at the Board of Regents. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for having me, and it's nice of you to do this tribute to Jesse Dale Thorne.
I think that's appropriate, who died the early morning hours of May 8th. He was 71 years old, and the last few years of his life, he battled Parkinson's disease and ultimately succumbed to it in Brandon, Mississippi. And there is a service tonight in Brandon, Mississippi to commemorate the life of Jesse Dale Thorne. But you knew him well. He was a complex individual, but there was nobody quite like him.
No, Dale was an interesting man. We first met when Edwin Edwards got elected governor. He was Governor Edwards' first press secretary in his first term. At the time, I was at the Coordinating Council for Higher Education, which segued into the Board of Regents that we have today. Dale was eager to get out of the press business, I guess, and wanted to get into higher education, and approached me about possibly coming to work for the new Board of Regents, which went into effect in January of 1975, and we were able to accommodate that. And he progressed on and eventually obtained a PhD and was dedicated to the concept of quality higher education.
He obtained a PhD, and this is from a man who in 1960, when he graduated from high school at the age of 17, did not go to college. He went straight to the Marines. Not many young men make that choice.
No, he was very proud of his service in the United States Marine Corps, 4 years. And he never let you forget that he was a Marine, and for good reason. I mean, that's something to be very proud of. Yes, you're right. Mm-hmm. He also, very few people know this, but when he was in high school, he was in a rock and roll band. And this was quite interesting for his father was a Baptist preacher. And for the son of a Baptist preacher to be in a rock and roll band, that was quite revolutionary. But mm-hmm. He played the piano, played it by ear, and he was quite good, and he could sing. Very versatile man.
Yeah, and he could write very well. And I know, Sam, you appreciate good writing. Dale was a mentor to many of us. In that,
Dale was responsible. I really wasn't a big reader until I took his class, his first class at LSU, and he gave us an outside reading assignment to read Willie Morris's book of Terrain to the Heart and other essays on home. And it was that book. I really enjoyed that book, and it turned me on to Willie Morris as well as reading in general, to be quite honest with you, which kind of dumbfounded my father because he had always encouraged me to read, and I just never took to it until I took Dale's class.
297-5633 is your number, and I'm sure there are some folks who are listening who remember Dr. Thorne with great reverence, as they should, and he died at the age of 71 early last Thursday, May the 8th, 2014, born October 7th, 1942, right in the heart of World War II, and a guy at 17 who went to the Marines, then got his PhD and taught many at LSU, and was the first press secretary to Edwin Edwards, and he had worked for Governor Edwards when he was Congressman Edwards. We'll return with Bill Arsenault and Sam Hanna. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757, wherever you are. And you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Michelle Southern producing. And we're remembering Jesse Dale Thorne, 1942 to 2014. He will be remembered today in Brandon, Mississippi. There is a service tonight at the Ott and Lee Funeral Home, and 5 to 6 will be visitation, followed by a service to commemorate the life of Dale Thorne, who touched the lives of many of us. And two of those who were friends of his, Dr. William Arsenault and Sam Hanna Jr., who's now one of the top publishers in Louisiana, a family tradition, and Dale knew his dad, Sam Hanna Sr., but they're involved. Before we get back to Dale Thorne and a few things, and I didn't want the hour to get away without talking to each of them about some of their personal activities, and Dr. Arsenault was on this show last time fighting for funding for Cotafil, and the governor came through for you, didn't he?
Yes, he did. The Cotafil budget has been doubled in the current appropriations bill. Now, we have to hold it. As you know, in the world of politics and in the legislature, when you want to add money to a budget, you have mm-hmm. to find some place to get it from. But we have very strong support in the legislature, particularly from the Acadiana delegation. They've gotten behind Cotafil, made a strong effort, and these are legislators all the way from Homer to Lake Charles, and places in between. And the governor has realized the importance of Cotafil, and particularly the economic development issues. There are 46 French companies that are doing business in Louisiana. And one of the reasons, and we have this in writing, one of the reasons is that our history, our culture, which is very tied to the Francophone world.
Okay. And before Sammy leaves us, we're going to ask him about the latest statements from Vance McAllister, who was outed by Sam and his publication with the video that saw Congressman McAllister kissing a woman who was not his wife. And now the congressman who a few days ago said he was out and maybe testing the waters to get back in the race. So we'll talk with Sam.
Yeah.
Go ahead, briefly. Let's get the
Cliff
Notes
version.
Well,
I think he's obviously he can't make up his mind what he wants to do, or I think he, if I had to guess, what he's trying to do is preserve his options or make himself viable to try to raise money because he's carrying such so much campaign.
Okay.
You
don't think he's running?
I think he'd be a fool if he did.
Okay. 297-5633. Let's not mince words. Dale in Mid-City. Good morning, Dale. You're on the air with Dr. Arsenault and Sammy Hanna, Jr. Hi, Dale.
Good morning to all of you. Dr. Arsenault, I would just like to say hello to you. You may not remember me, but I worked under your administration at the Board of Regents back in 77. Dale Thorne hired me. I was Dale Moran at the time.
I remember you well.
And it's so good to hear your voice. I'm sorry under these circumstances, but I just wanted to express the privilege that I had to work under Dale Thorne with a health manpower project that particular year, and his guidance, and, you know, I just really stood to learn a lot from him. And later on, years passed, and we became friends when I moved back here from New Orleans. He befriended my family. He played on my parents' upright piano. He even gave some lovely books to a daughter of mine who remembers that well. She's 26 today, and he just made an indelible impression, and I just wanted to share that.
Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Thank you, Dale.
All right, bye-bye.
And Dale is one of those people who, even though he was in the public eye for much of his life, Bill and Sam, he was modest, and he did a lot of things like this for mm-hmm. many people.
Yes, he did. And you make a good point. He tried to avoid the public glare, stayed out of wherever he could. We had a lot of course, we were always in the public domain. We always had reporters at the Board of Regents all over the place at our meetings as well as on a daily basis. But Dale was almost shy when it came to not wanting to take credit for things. He'd push me forward or push somebody else on the staff forward, but he's always there with the answers. And he was a very calming influence. I'm a Cajun, you know, and I get a little excited sometimes, but he always calmed me down, and which led generally to the right decision.
And he always cheered his friends on. Sam, you know that.
I see. He did. There was a time in my life when I was having a great deal of personal problems, and Dale was stood by me through thick and thin. And never backed up, and always was very encouraging. And he was a dear friend, not just to me, but to my family, and I'll always remember it.
I recall once, Sam, you may remember this too. I went to see him in Brandon, Mississippi, because I viewed him as a is a mentor and a counselor, and I had some things I wanted to talk about with him, and it was late at night. He loved to keep late hours, and we were talking. He spent half the time talking to me in person and half the time talking to you on the telephone.
He did keep late hours. I tell you, he would. It was not uncommon for the phone to ring at 1 o'clock in the morning or possibly later. But that was Dale. He'd slept half the day and stayed up half the night.
He lived
and had lunch about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
He lived life on his terms. There's no doubt, but. The former Dale Moran called, and she worked with Dale and Bill Arsenault at the Board of Regents, and at the board, Dale and you, you were instrumental in resolving a conflict between the state and the Department of Justice over desegregation in higher education, weren't you?
Yes, a lot of people forget this was a big deal. The United States government sued the state of Louisiana, claiming we operated a segregated school higher education system. And their big push was to merge LSU and Southern University. It was tough. We had finally, with the leadership of Governor Edwards and Governor Treen, we were able to convince the United States Department of Justice to agree to a consent decree that would prevent us from having to go to trial and bring this thing to a satisfactory conclusion. Quite frankly, neither Southern nor LSU wanted to merge. But we had to fight that battle, and Dale was right there in the trenches with me and our attorneys.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mentioned that he was Edwards' first press secretary, and he was his last press secretary when he was a congressman, too.
That's true.
He was with him in Washington and in Baton Rouge. And Sammy, you're a rock-solid conservative Republican, but you had your tour of duty with Edwin Edwards. You and Dale must have commiserated about... Your respective experiences.
We had some spirited discussions. I tell you something funny. He told me one time that Edwards offered him the job to go to Washington, and he said that the key to it that prompted him to take the job is that Edwards told him about how the number women outnumbered men on Capitol Hill, and That's a true story. That's what he told me. He said that locked up in his mind. He never told him that made up his mind. He's going to take the job.
Well, perhaps you buried the lead. Dale loved women, and they loved him. And rarely did you see Dale without a female companion. Bill, he certainly he was a man who loved life.
Indeed.
But I didn't want to come right out and say it. Top of the show, Jim. I didn't want to, you know, we're talking about Dale, and I didn't want to talk about all of his girlfriends that he kept through the years, and sometimes more than one at once.
Well, somewhere, I think Dale might be laughing or frowning at this conversation at this point, but there was much more to him than that, and he was a great teacher. He taught public relations at LSU, and I was in grad school and had him for a class, and I don't know that there was a class that I enjoyed more. And Dale, as we know, politically was a very liberal person, but I remember the first book that he assigned us back, this was 1994, was a book written by Roger Ailes. And it's I think the title of the book is You Are the Message. It's a great book, by the way, by Mr. Ailes, and this was before his tenure with Fox News, but he was a guy who did not close his mind to any point of view. He was open-minded to a fault. And a Baptist in faith, but he rarely talked about this. And, Bill, you said his father was a minister.
Yes, and Dale was a teetotaler. He just, he never, liquor never touched his lips. I assume that, I always attributed that to his upbringing. However, he was a dedicated smoker. He loved to smoke, and I tried through the years to get him to switch to liquor, give up tobacco, and join me in liquor. But he never would. And I have a feeling that this, as smoking will do, I think it has something to do with his deteriorating situation in his later years.
It probably did. You're exactly the same age.
No, I'm a year older.
Wow. Pretty close. He was 71. You're 71, aren't you?
72.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. You look pretty good. So,
that's because I never smoked and I drank a lot.
well, Sammy, as far as journalism, you've taken some brave stands, particularly with the Concordia Sentinel. We've talked about the projects you've been involved with and unearthing these cold cases involving murders that were inflicted on black people in the 1960s. Dale, this is the kind of story that he would be quite proud of, and he noted to me that he was really pleased with the fact that you were going in this direction, and not many publishers would do this.
Well, it's only fitting that Stanley Nelson be given the credit for the work that he did, and all of the, because he did all of it. I made this very clear one time in an interview with a lady from the New York Times, that my role in it extended that I had just enough sense to get out of the way, so Stanley could do his job. And whenever the occasion arose that there was some griping or somebody was complaining or that I took the heat and didn't mind doing it, because I knew what Stanley was doing was right. And it was it's a fascinating case, and also a sad reminder of a time in our nation's history that human life was treated so callously and without respect.
Mm-hmm.
But it was and I thought about Dale during all that, and I mentioned to him a couple of times that I wish he would take some time and go to Concordia Parish and maybe get involved in it. But at that point, Dale's health had taken a turn, and he just wasn't up to it.
Well, Dale was a reporter before he went to work for Edwin Edwards, and I recall him saying that he once interviewed the governor of Arkansas, Winthrop Rockefeller, who was one of the richest men in the world, the brother of Nelson Rockefeller, son of John Rockefeller. And they were in the governor's mansion in Little Rock, and there was a hole in the ceiling, and water was coming through the ceiling, and there was a pail of a bucket that was capturing the water as Dale was interviewing the governor of Arkansas, who was one of the richest men in the world. And when Rockefeller was amused that the ceiling was literally caving in at the governor's mansion, and Dale captured that moment like only he could, and he wrote some things, Bill Arsenault, some of which have been published and others have not been published. I hope at some point after his death that everything is out for public consumption. I'd like for people to experience the writing of Dr. Thorne.
Well, he did write a novel of which he shared the manuscript with me, which I read. It was interesting. It's fiction. It was set in Baton Rouge and centered on the LSU campus. It was interesting. To my knowledge, he never submitted it for publication, but it was very interesting and well done. Then in recently he wrote a book of short stories, which he sent a copy to me, and they're quite entertaining. Very good.
What do you recall most about him, Sam?
He's so deliberate and well read, very intelligent, cool headed, and I don't think I ever saw him get very angry. He was, and I thought that Dale was just a good person. He was his relationship with his cousins in Mississippi was very important to him. And he's very devoted to LSU.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that he retired too early.
he was. I think Dale wasn't but about 59 when he left LSU. 57.
He was 58, I guess, or right at 58. Yep. But I know he treasured the friendship he had with both of you gentlemen, and he was quite proud of your son Scott. Bill Scott Arsenault has become a major political player in Washington, and before that in Louisiana, and he took great pride in the success that Scott was having.
Yes, he did. We during the last presidential campaign, we spoke quite often. He was there was a fairly it was a progressive Democrat, and was very much pulling for President Obama. And my son Scott at the time was is and he still is the executive director of the Florida Democratic Party. And Florida, as you know, played a key role in that election. It's a swing state. And Scott was on MSNBC and on several occasions, and Dale was always watching him.
Well, thank you, Bill Arsenault. Thank you, Sam Hanna, Jr.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.